Welcome to Plans Are Booked, a podcast for every reader. I'm Molly Geller.
I'm Stephanie Blackburn.
And I'm Caitlin Madison. Welcome to chapter 22.
Cue the Taylor Swift.
Okay, so 22 is kind of a lucky number for me. 17 is my real lucky number, but 22 is another one. I don't know if you guys definitely don't know this. I don't know how you would. But when I was a senior in college, I lived at a house 22 Howard Street, and we just called it 22, and we all turned 22 when we lived in the house, and we felt that that was lucky. And then there's the Taylor Swift song, and I don't know, for some reason, I just like 22. I don't know. I was 22 in softball at one point, for a couple of years. I just like it. It feels good. How's everyone doing?
I'm going to start off by posing a question.
Getting right into it. Steph has not been messing around. The pre-pod, she was like, I have big plans. This is what they are. I was like, do I need alcohol? It's only 10:30 in the morning. And it's been going well so far.
I should say that we haven't been together in a week and a half. Sitting down to podcast.
It's been that long. But we had 2 weeks.
I know, but that wasn't like, there were other people there. It wasn't like I could be like, here's the list of things in my head I've been meaning to share with you.
Got it. So this is your thought journal with Molly and Caitlin?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I saw this thing on Twitter over a week ago, and it blew my mind apart. Like I didn't even know how to process it. I've bookmarked it so I can send the video to both of you. But here's my question first before I share it with you.
I think I know what it's going to be, but go.
No, tell me what you think it's going to be.
There is a viral thing going around about, do you have a voice in your head when you read?
Yes. Do either of you have an inner monologue?
Yes, of course I do.
Do you?
Wait, do you mean like, what do I hear while I'm reading?
No, not for, so to ignore the reading aspect right now. When you are by yourself, are you talking in your head?
Of course, I live alone.
Yeah, there's people that don't have that.
Apparently half the population do not have inner monologues. So in this video on Twitter, this guy and this girl are sitting down together. I think they're in class together. And he asks her, because she does not have an inner monologue, so he asks specifically about reading. How does she read a book? Because she cannot hear a voice. So like when I'm reading, in my head, my voice is narrating the book.
Correct.
She does not. She sees the word. She says she mouths it sometimes, or she'll read aloud. But she sees the word, she places it where it needs to go into the plot, but she doesn't picture the things that are being said. His reaction was just a sort of silence, and I had the exact same reaction because how?
So I've seen articles like over the years about these people that don't get mental images when they're reading. And there's a lot of, because I'm a teacher and because I teach English, like I've read a lot about it because, you know, there are a lot of kids, they get to middle school and they're like whisper reading, which is like the kind of saying it out loud sort of thing. And for a long time, I was like, oh gosh, did I like give them a book that's too hard for them that they're like whisper reading it out loud? And then when I did some digging on it, it was like, no, that's usually people who don't have an inner voice and don't have a mental picture of what they're reading. And I was like, what? That's a thing. And so that's when I first learned about it. But it was because it was for like an entirely different reason. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm giving kids books that are way too hard.
So the girl in the video says she doesn't read books for fun. She doesn't read fiction because
Okay, you guys can't see me, but my eyes are like stuck elevated. Like I'm still reacting to this. I can't imagine, first of all, not just like narrating the day in your mind.
I have every conversation in my head before I actually have the conversation.
Sometimes I say them out loud in the shower if it's going to be a tricky one. Like if I'm like, back when I was like in a really stressful job situation, I'd be like, all right, I need to play out what I'm going to say when I'm in this meeting with so-and-so. And sometimes I would do it out loud in the shower.
I mean, there's an iceberg and like you're only seeing the tip of all the conversations I've previously had and worked out. So as to not have to have them in real life.
Right. But that's like anxiety. That's not just that. You can call it an overactive inner monologue if you would like.
Okay. But I also, I'm still processing everything that you just said about that people don't have that and that they don't read like that. But also I had a conversation with a friend recently about people who don't spend all day thinking about what they're going to eat next, which is like legitimately like 80% of my brain.
Yeah.
It's like, should I go out for breakfast or should I not? Should I make something? Yeah. Should I not? If I eat this for breakfast and I can't have this for lunch because those ingredients are
or
too
thinking
similar.
Thinking about your cabinet and your like your pantry and your refrigerator and mm-hmm. like what you have and what things could go together is like a little puzzle I play at like 2 o'clock every afternoon.
Truly, like if someone is walking through the world not thinking about what they're going to eat next, like I can't even imagine what I could do with all that extra brain space.
She said she just has like mental pictures of the thing, but there's no, she's not hearing the word in her head.
Wow.
Yeah.
I looked up what the official term was because I was curious. It's called aphantasia. And people with it may also, so if you find it difficult to picture voluntary images in your head, aka I call it daydreaming, yes. right? Like you're in the car, you're driving, mm-hmm. a song comes on, it makes you think of somebody or something, and then all of a sudden you're playing out Travis and Taylor dancing to it at their wedding, you know, that sort of thing, right?
Or I'm picturing an entire book scene and writing the dialogue in
sure.
my head.
Sure, that sounds more productive than mine. But like that's right. So like we do that. So that if you don't have that, it's called aphantasia. A lot of people that have that also have another thing called anadralia, which is a term now being used to describe the absence of auditory imagery or your inner voice. So they're now connecting, like, if you have this one thing, it's pretty likely that you also have this other thing because it has to do with, like, being able to imagine in your head, which I just thought was, like, we were all born with that, but...
I know. If anyone listening, please reach out to us because I'm just so... If you don't hear voices in your
head... That's probably okay, everyone. But
if you don't have an inner monologue,
yeah,
tell us.
I also want to know what kind of careers people go into who don't have the inner monologue. Right. Like, what are their superpowers?
I would say that the kids I know that I'm pretty sure had it are like really into like kill and drill, spreadsheets, math, formulaic things. They're very or like. Straight organization of like, okay, here's all this information and I need to put it into these like data tables and, you know, or coding, really good at coding, anything that has like a rhythm to it that you don't have to like imagine. It's like non-creative jobs, I guess, is what I would call it.
I do wonder if there are any writers that have it. Would that even be possible? Because I feel like
no.
I know, because like 90% of creating a book happens in my head before I even sit down to a computer.
And I'm thinking back to when we went to the romance author event and someone asked, do they outline, do they plan, mm-hmm. do they whatever? And many of them were like, nope, I just like, the story takes me where it takes me.
What was the term? Pantsing?
Panty liner.
Well, that was like a shoot off of it. It was like pantsing versus...
Pantser? Pants? When you do the outline thing?
No, I think it's like the seat of your pants is when you're not planning. Was it planning versus pantsing? Not important. Anyways, moving on.
I'm just, so my inner monologue is at its peak when I am trying to go to bed.
Yes. Or
which
showering.
Is anxiety. Showering is also another big one. And
that's why I take melatonin.
I'm more heavily medicated than that. But I use a fan for white noise to drown out all extraneous noises because if I hear creaks and cracks and birds and this, that, it's just like my brain is spinning and it doesn't turn off. And it used to be like just stress. Like I was stressed about work and I wouldn't stop thinking about work or my students or whatever. And my inner monologue would just be like out of control. People that don't have this. Think about it. When they're just sitting there in a moment of quiet There's nothing.
Well, so like I can't meditate because right. I'm going through lists.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. You can't turn it off. They must sleep like babies. They must have. So maybe those people are actually like the super producers of the world. Isn't that a Malcolm Gladwell term? Super producer? People that like are able to do more in a day than other people. Yeah. That must be those people, because when they go to bed, they're not thinking about a darn thing, and then they're well rested, and then they get up, and then they can rock and roll. That's what I'm thinking.
I call those people Beyonce, but yes, maybe he calls them super producers.
Yeah. I had a principal one time that was a super producer, operated on like 4 hours of sleep, did more than anyone I knew. She was like a principal at our school and in a PhD program and taught grad school courses to people that wanted to be principal. Like it was, she had 2 kids, like single mom. I was like, what? What? And I think I'll ask her next time I see her. I'll be like, are you an inner monologue person? Because I'm just wondering if there's a correlation between super producers. And we got really meta on this pod. Like right from, I told you 22 is a good one. 22 is good. Steph started us off strong.
Do you know how many conversations I had in my head in the past week preparing to ask you this question?
And yet you still had to write it down to remember to ask us about it on said pod.
Yes, the truth of the age that we have reached right now. I want to transition just to saying thank you to some of our listeners who responded to a question we posed with the latest episode. We talked about The Butcher and the Wren and the mystery genre, and we asked what mystery books we should consider reading next. So shout out to Sally and to Ellie for their great suggestions. The Girl on the Train, which I know many of us have read.
I hated it too. Maul, did you read it?
Of course she did.
I did read it.
Okay, so we've all read that one.
I mean, I just hate, why can't I think of the term?
Unreliable narrator.
I think that was the book that I first told you about that term, and you were like, I hate someone that I don't believe.
Girl, yeah, is yeah. One. Yeah.
The next recommendation is one I think all of us read and loved. One of Us is Lying. YA. You can picture the cover.
Yeah. Yes. I didn't
high
read
school.
Any of the other ones.
Didn't they make a show out of that?
Yes, they did.
I didn't watch it.
I didn't either.
And then the last one is about a specific author, Tana French. Anything
God,
by
I
Tana
love
French.
Tana French.
Ellie is obsessed.
Wait, time
with
out.
Tana
is
French.
Dublin Murders Tana French?
Yes.
Did you watch that show?
No.
Oh, fantastic.
Did I watch that show?
I don't know.
No.
It was, I think it was during the height of COVID.
I'm thinking of Bad Sisters.
Bad Sisters is phenomenal.
So we thank you for your recs, and we will certainly put up more question boxes as the weeks roll on, because we love hearing from you and we love seeing if we're reading the same things, like the same things. So thank you for engaging with our content. We appreciate it. I also wanted to share for those who are in the New England area. Last night I went to a book-themed restaurant. It's called the Library Restaurant in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Just as an aside, I need to say that this restaurant has a pretty strict cancellation policy. If you don't cancel before 5 a.m. the day of, they charge you $30 per person if you don't show up. The reason I am mentioning this, yesterday there was a pretty intense rainstorm going on. And as I was driving up there, it was bad, but like manageable. When I drove home last night, the rain was coming down like in sheets. I was white knuckling it the entire time. I thought about pulling over multiple times, but then I knew because I had looked at the hour by hour forecast before I got in the car, it wasn't going to get better. I feel like you don't have that many moments in a lifetime of like, this could be where it ends. Like it's been good knowing everyone, but that was my experience in that drive last night where I was like, wow, this is like, really, when you see the power of nature and when you just need to realize, like, maybe we should have stayed home. But anyway, the Library Restaurant, if you are in the New England area or plan to visit, is in a beautiful brick building that, as you likely guessed, used to be a library. And they have these gorgeous displays in the dining room of, like, every book kind of looks like a first edition book and beautiful, leather bound and arranged in these stunning ways. And then the whole cocktail menu is literature themed. My friend Bevan and I had this drink called The Great Expectations.
I would have gone with the last word, which is popular at other restaurants as well.
Yes, the drink menu was great. And then the food is just like a normal upscale restaurant. But they brought the check inside of one of those like gorgeous books.
Love that.
I just love those kind of like small details that make it all kind of come together. Interestingly, it had a pretty like fancy white tablecloth vibe, except all the servers were wearing black and gold sequin vests. And I was like, are we at a Steelers game? Like, what's happening here? It was the most bizarre, like, outfit choice for the team. And then at the end, we went to use the restroom before we got on the road. And it's in the basement of the building. And I felt like I'd been transported into, like, my elementary school. It was, like, where the toilets are, like, low to the ground and those tiny stalls. And I was like, how is it that a restaurant this nice has, like, an elementary school-style bathroom?
I'm not going to lie. There's like an entire, like, I don't know if you guys know this, and I only know it because I'm friends with people that are a lot younger than us. There are entire Instagrams dedicated to where you can take the best bathroom selfie in every city. And so I have friends that are like, oh, I'm in London. I have to go to these two restaurants because the bathrooms are like insane. So the fact that this place isn't in on the bathroom game is a little ridiculous.
It's super bizarre. And when I made the reservation and then again, when they send you like the automated text, they reinforce every step of their communication with you that, quote, upscale dress is required. And I was like, how can you say that? And then this is your bathroom. This should be a bathroom with like gold trimmed mirrors and like real cloth towels. And like, I just, it was so bizarre.
Well, you know my thoughts on bathrooms. I'm sure I could have found that, you know, caulking was used in the wrong place or grout was, you know.
Yes, I'm sure you're right. Any other catch-up items before we move into our book?
I went to Florida. It was sunny. I played golf. I turned 39. I met my parents' dogs, who are super cute, two Boston Terriers, lots of puppy energy.
What are the dogs' names?
Fergus and Fiona.
Hashtag adopt, don't shop.
Well, my parents are old and there's just no talking them into other things.
While we're on the adoption conversation, I have to admit something, which is that we've talked a few times here about Barstool Sports and various connections to that. I don't follow it closely. I'm not a huge sports fan, but many people have started following the account for Dave Portnoy's new dog, Famous Misspeeches. This dog was adopted from a hoarding situation in Atlanta. I wasn't following it at first. It was just like being served to me on my Explore page. And then I just like fell in love with her and I started following it. I am not kidding you when I say I have almost pressed add to cart like 7 times on the Misspeeches sweatshirt.
It's so cute. It has peaches down the sleeve and it says adopt, don't shop. And all of the merch that he's selling goes to adoption shelters.
Love that.
Okay, it's so awesome.
I'll show it to you guys before we part ways in case we want to get like matching. I would be delighted to finance that. I don't know much about him. I know he's like a controversial person. I really don't know enough to even speak on it, but I'm obsessed with this dog and I'm obsessed with the fact that every single penny that he's raising from this merch, he's donating. He gave one rescue in New York $25,000. It's just like amazing. And they're raising so much money and he's doing everything, like everything pro bono, which I don't know why he decided to do that, but it seems kind of actually not aligned with everything else I've heard about him, but I'm elated and I think I have to have.
So I do follow Barstool Sports. It makes me a bad feminist. It's fine. The backstory on that is that he was dating a model for a really long time who had a rescue pit and they broke up. And he and his ex-wife, Renee, had a miniature, I can't remember what kind of dog it was. He always called him the king of the toys, the king of the toy dogs. But that was a dog that I think his wife maybe had before they got married. And so I don't think he's ever adopted a dog before. Dan Katz, aka Big Cat, who Molly went to high school with, he also has a rescue pit named Stella, and he has a coffee brand named Stella Blue Coffee. And he raises money all the time for the rescue that, which I think is in Chicago, that he got Stella from. And he's had Stella. I mean, she's got to be getting up there in age. But she is like the logo of his coffee brand. And so I think that Dan might have been like, Dave, if you're going to get a dog, this is what I would do. And like, Stella's so awesome and you love her and like, blah, blah, blah. And I think that Dan might have influenced him a little bit, because I think it's like 10 or 20% of all the proceeds from the coffee that he sells goes to adoption shelters. So there's already like one angle of that. Now, it could be that it was like a friendly competition and Dave is now like pouncing all over Dan's thing, but I don't really know if that's like a behind the scenes thing that's going on, but I don't care because of who it benefits. So like, it's a win-win.
Also, Dave Portnoy is traveling right now, and every hotel he's going to, these hotels have printed pictures of Miss Peaches and are framing them and putting them in his hotel room. Unbelievable.
I would cry.
It's amazing. It's so fun.
I've seen so much content that's like, I hate Dave Portnoy, but I love his Miss Peaches dog dad voice. And it's just like, it's true. He has like a different personality on that account. And I've been watching it like soar. I think when I first noticed it, he was at like 300,000 followers. And when I looked yesterday, he was at 857,000. Like, they're going to get to a million probably in the next couple of weeks.
He agreed to take Miss Peaches to some fancy mall in the Miami area.
Dadeland Mall.
Okay. To see the Easter Bunny. And the mall paid Miss Peaches as like a celeb. And all the money went to whatever shelters Dave picked.
I'm extremely into it. Into her account.
She's so great. And I will totally take you up on the Miss Peaches outerwear.
Okay, amazing. We'll look at it after this and then I'll order
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Okay, amazing. Okay, any other catch-up items? No?
I'm almost done with tiling. I just have a tiny bit left. So.
Oh, yes, wait.
Yay, tiling is almost done.
Tell the people like a broader update about your timeline and what you're marching towards.
It's taken me 2 weeks to do both bathrooms, walls, marble shelves, and flooring. But
my mom is really worried about the tiling on the ceiling.
Oh, it's not going anywhere.
What do you mean?
Steph was worried it might fall down.
She's not worried. No. She's not worried about it going anywhere. She's worried that you're like turning your body into a pretzel and that it's really difficult. And why would she do that to herself? I believe was the direct quote.
I think Steph asked herself every day why she's doing this to herself.
She commented on one of the posts and wrote gravity ? And I was like, I don't even know how to respond to that.
Sounds about right.
It was stressful. Had a lot of, built up anger towards the tile and why did I choose to do this? And maybe I should have just become a veterinarian. But anyways, it's done except for one small piece that I will do this week. Tomorrow, countertops are going in. Bathroom vanities are going in. Wednesday, appliances are arriving. Wednesday, the tub is getting refinished, which if you don't know, you can refinish a cast iron tub. It gets blasted and sanded, and then they re-enamel it. It is the cheapest option, I believe, for not having to break apart a cast iron tub and take it out if you ever need to do that. And they can paint it any color you want. Just so you know, we're hoping to be listed the second week of April. So stress-free life is ahead of me. It's just a little out of reach. So that's it.
We always go on a tour of Stephanie's homes after she finishes. So I'm very excited to see this one. Sometimes I see them in the early stages or midway through, sometimes we just happen to be naturally driving past the homes. But I haven't seen this one in person at all. So I've been following along like everyone else on your Instagram, and I can't wait to see it when you are feeling it is finished.
I just had an idea. What if we started a tradition where we recorded a pod in each of the houses?
When it's like done?
Yeah, like when it's staged. Oh,
there's no internet there.
Oh, shoot. Okay, I'll think about how I could make that happen.
Okay.
Because I feel like that would be kind of like a fun vibe.
And the acoustics would be amazing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm going to look into how we hotspot. Don't people hotspot? Isn't that a thing? Wattpad, hotspot. I don't know shit. Got nothing.
Have candles, we'll travel. Okay, let's get into our topic for today, which is the author Tia Williams and two of her books that we absolutely adored. I want to start with 7 Days in June, which was kind of like the gateway book for all of us. There are a few ways that I learn about new books besides these two brilliant women, which is I follow a ton of authors on Instagram, and often they get advanced copies. And so if they're obsessed with something, they'll usually shout it out pretty loudly. And then there are a couple book reviewers that I follow. Same thing. Like, they'll talk about early access to stuff. 7 Days in June was all over the place in the months before it came out. So I added it to my Goodreads, and then unbeknownst to me, it was selected as a Reese book club pick, and then it like blew up. I thought this was her first book. It is not. But I think it was such a phenomenon. It's like really the word. That many people thought that this was like a debut novel, and this was like her bursting onto the scene. Tia Williams has a very fascinating background, which is that she was a beauty blogger before she ever.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and I wrote down the name of it. Hold on, her beauty blog was called "Shake Your Beauty." Extremely cute. I love a pun. And then she was an editor, magazine editor, Elle, Glamour, Lucky, Teen People, Essence. Then she was the editorial director for Estee Lauder, the makeup company, before the books came out. So 7 Days in June was my first one, and I mentioned you guys before we started recording. I always do my Goodreads review like the second that I finish a book while it's like fresh in my mind. I gave this 5 stars, and this is not giving anything away. I wrote on March 23rd, 2023. I devoured this book. I was rooting for Eva and Shane every second. Williams' writing is raw and real, and at times takes your breath away. There are so many brilliant phrases, sentences, and entire pages that if I had been using a highlighter, would have turned the whole book blue. This has already been optioned for film/TV, and I can't wait to reunite with these characters when it premieres. I know, Steph, you felt similarly about the writing. I'm going to hand you our hard copy here.
I did not know it was already optioned.
I didn't either. I don't think I realized.
Oh, it
that.
Is.
So I just want to read the beginning, because this book had me from the first sentence, but I'm going to read the first paragraph.
Well, wait, should we say what this book is about?
I feel like...
No, okay, you do the page and then I'll do it.
In the year of our Lord 2019, 32-year-old Ava Mercy nearly choked to death on a piece of gum. She'd been attempting to masturbate when the gum lodged in her throat, cutting off her air supply. As she slowly blacked out, she kept imagining her daughter, Audrey, finding her flailing about in Christmas jammies while clutching a tube of strawberry lube and a dildo called the quarterback, which vibrated at a much higher frequency than advertised, gum-choking frequency. The obituary headline would be "Death by Dildo." Hell of a legacy to leave her orphan 12-year-old.
Okay. So the rest of the book, I would say, is not quite as saucy as that opening. So, like, don't let that scare you.
No, it's a hook.
It's a hook, yeah.
Yes.
But, like, this is a book about, this is how it was pitched to me, because this was in the depths of my TBR pile. Like, I had been given this a long time ago, and it just, like, kept going towards the bottom. And then finally Molly and Steph were like, read this goddamn book. We need to do a pod about it. One of you or both of you put it as a book that you wish you could read again for the first time. Did you do it too, Molly?
No, we both did.
Both of us.
Yeah, both of you did. And then that's when I was like, okay, I gotta dig this out. It's about two kids from traumatic backgrounds that meet in Washington, D.C. at the end of 12th grade. And they're together for this like very passionate, very eye-opening week in which they both have felt like misfits, and they've never really met anybody else that academically challenges them, is the way I would describe it. And then 20 years later, or however long later it is, 15 years later, they have both become writers, and they haven't seen each other since that week, and they bump into each other, and it kind of turns both people's worlds upside down in different ways. And it's about people that are overcoming obstacles and battling inner demons and exterior demons and what success can look like. And there's good banter between friends and between love interests. And there's a really precocious daughter who plays a cool role in it. And it's just got a lot of different things going for it. I actually was very turned off from the book in the first 20 pages. I'm not going to lie. Steph is like got a shocked face right now, but like the main character, Eva, who you later find out her real name is Genevieve, she starts off being at this like book fan convention for her book series called Cursed, which is about like witches and vampires, and it's saucy, and she like makes all this money off of this like book series, and she's got these like funky fans, and she has like a debilitating migraine condition that she's kind of like dealing with in stressful situations. And I just didn't find her super likable at the start. And I was like, oh boy, like she's going to be one of two main characters. Like this is really, she's like got it going on and she's like pretty fancy. And like, she has this like invisible disease, but she also like kind of has it going on and things are going pretty well for her. And like, I was just kind of like meh on her. And it wasn't until the flashbacks where you find out how far she's come that I was like, ooh, now she's interesting. Whereas Shane, the male protagonist, he was interesting from the go to me because he is a really prolific writer who basically does no promotion for anything. He's kind of like a background guy, very mysterious. He's like 2 years sober, has kind of had a lot of ups and downs in his life that like drinking has kind of been a constant. And he teaches English at these like random high schools where he mentors kids that he sees himself in. So like as an English teacher, like literally from the first page that Shane exists, I was like, I'm in, I want to know more about him. He's interesting. And it just took a little longer with Eva. And I think that once I got like maybe 50, 60 pages in, I was like so intrigued by Shane that I like stayed along for the ride. And then when I found out more about Eva, I was like, okay, like I'm in. I dog-eared some pages, which is against my religion, because I was reading this in airports back and forth from Florida. But I do have a couple spots that kind of like, I thought the phrasing was just really good. And I was like, this has got a lot more going on than just like a rom-com.
Well, to that point, can I just say that I don't want people to be deterred by the fact that this is in the romance section. I personally didn't think of it as a romance book. In my mind, the general romance section of the bookstore is sort of like light, fluffy, cosmic run-ins that would never happen in real life. And instead, this book feels very rooted in realistic everyday traumas and doesn't feel light and fluffy, even though that first paragraph that I read might seem light and fluffy. That is not what the book is. So don't think like I'm not going to enjoy this book because it's located in the romance section.
I totally agree. I feel like when I talk to people about this book, I don't even want to call it a romance. Yeah. I feel like it's so much more sophisticated than that, and it delves into their past in a way that's really powerful. And while Caitlin is looking for the other pages she wants to read, I just want to say that I was picturing, while I was reading this one particular actor as Shane. His name is Kendrick Sampson, and he played Nathan on Insecure, for anybody who watched that show. He has like the most...
Wasn't he also in the Vampire Diaries sequel?
Yes, as Jesse. He's also in How to Get Away with Murder.
In the originals?
Yeah. Could not think of the name of that. I'm doing too many things at once.
Anyway, I have no idea who they're going to cast, but that's who I was picturing mentally. There's something about him, even though he's like so flawed and he has so much going on and he's like his own worst enemy, you're just like attracted to him. There's something about who he wants to become and the way he doesn't care about the fame of his writing. And, you know, she is the total opposite. She has like this incredible fandom that follows her everywhere. Also, her pen name in the book is Eva Mercy, which I just love. I just think that's like an amazing pen name for like a fanficky type author.
I think that this would be beautiful on screen, and it would destroy me and I would cry horribly, but I think it would be, I really hope that it gets made.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so here are a couple of, I feel like recently I've really been like a minor character gal. Like I've really, I'm big on sidekicks in books usually. Like growing up reading books that had sidekicks, I always liked them better. And like Ron Weasley's my favorite character in Harry Potter. Like I love a sidekick. But recently the minor characters have really been like pulling me in. And I don't know if it's just that I'm reading books where the authors do them really well. But at the beginning of the book, there's these like two literary friends that Eva has, and they have these like hilarious lunches and dinners, and they're just in each other's lives in like very like robust ways where they kind of can say anything to each other. And there's at one point in the book, they're at a like a book convention thing, and Eva says to one of her friends, she goes, "Have you ever been in a Walmart?" And her friend goes, "Physically, yes. Spiritually, no." And I want to like bring that into my life on a regular basis. Like, yes, I force it's like, I feel that way about Florida. Like, physically, I was in Florida, but spiritually, I was not there.
Yes, ditto.
And then later on in the book, again, the trio of friends is having like a serious, not a serious conversation because how serious is going to be, but they're like talking about vaginal health, like with each other, which is like something that might come up with women. And so she's like, this is when Eva has like been reunited with Shane, and she's like, I'm playing with fire here. Like, this is a real bad situation. And like her two friends are going off about vaginal health and like getting their vaginas clean and all this other stuff. And there's an inner monologue part with Eva where she goes, am I really laying my burdens at the feet of these Muppets? I was like, I have been in moments where I've been like, I'm really laying it all out here, and people are like totally on like a different channel right now. And then my last favorite part is Shane gives Audrey, Eva's tween daughter, this like really kind of funny explanation about this turtle that he meets while he's like living abroad. And he's like, this turtle would come and go, and then like the turtle would be gone for a while, and then all of a sudden it would show back up like it had always been there. And I would just be like, it's okay, like I forgive you right off, like right from the bat. And then the turtle would stay with me for months, and then it would disappear again. And he's like, I just had this turtle that just like kept coming in and out of my life, and it just had free reign, and I let it do whatever it wants, and like blah blah blah, blah. And so then Audrey, the tween daughter, looks at Eva and Shane, and she goes, which one of you is the turtle? And they're like, what? And she goes, which one of you is the turtle? You know, the one who leaves and comes back and leaves again while the other waits. It's a metaphor, writers. Think about it. And so they have this like girl who has like no filter whatsoever, just being like, I'm watching the two of you, and this is like, this shouldn't be as much of a disaster as it is, and like get it together, basically.
Also in real life, Tia has a tween daughter, and many of this commentary is based on her. We also read her book that just came out in February called A Love Song for Ricky Wilde. Steph graciously pre-ordered it and went to Belmont Books and picked it up so that we could dive into it immediately with the rest of the readers. I was so excited to read this book because of how much I loved 7 Days in June. I should have known that that was a bad headspace to go into it. Like riding the high of the previous book and expecting the next one to match it. Her writing still makes me laugh out loud. I still think
great at banter.
Great at banter, which as we've discussed is the key to so many of these books. This story is set in Harlem in New York. It has a very deep sense of place and history, and there's some kind of cool stuff that they talk about how the main character celebrates the history of Harlem in the modern day. I am going to give away one element of this because I feel like it's important. So if you guys haven't read this yet and you want to just seek ahead like 30 seconds, there's some time travel involved here. And I didn't know that going in.
Neither did I when I purchased the hardcover.
Yeah. And when I got to that part, I think out loud, forget the inner monologue, out loud I went, oh no. Like, it was a turn I wasn't wanting or needing. and it felt like I got less excited to keep going. I did finish because I love her and I thought maybe it's going to redeem itself. I looked back at my Goodreads review this morning. I gave this one 3 stars. It's still beautifully written. It's still very moving. It just didn't like gut me the way 7 Days in June did. And I think that's common where like a writer has a book that's crazy, explosive, successful, and the follow-up sometimes just isn't on the same level.
I think that we should have gone into it not thinking at all about 7 Days in June, because how can you even compare to that? You can't. It was perfection.
Yeah. Hard to follow it up, but I've been following along on her book tour because we follow her. And it has been so freaking cool to see how many women of so many different ages, so many different races are showing up to support her. Every single place that she goes, packed rooms, standing room only, people buying the hardcover, waiting to have it signed, like people dressing as the character, Eva Mercy and her books. I mean, it's just like, it's awesome to see what a fandom she has. And whatever she comes out with next, I'm sure I will read it because I don't know, similar to like Jasmine Guillory, I'm like, I just love this person and I'm just going to keep.
We probably need to go back and read her first 2 books.
Yes. So the other books are The Perfect Find, which is actually now a Netflix movie with Gabrielle Union. And then The Accidental Diva. Those are the two that came out earlier. So if people are interested, we'll put all of this on Instagram so you have the full book list. But she does have others if you're curious about kind of what came before 7 Days in June.
The other thing that I want to say about 7 Days in June is there is a point in the book where I felt like it got very real and might have mirrored Tia Williams' life a little bit, because she talks about Cursed being optioned to become a movie, but they want to whitewash it and not have the characters be black. And Shane is like, yeah, you can't. Like, that's not you. Like, you don't want that. And she's like, I don't want that, but like, it would take the pressure off of me putting out more books in this series. Like, I would have a paycheck to live off of for a while and pay my kids' tuition and do this, that, and the other thing. It would buy me some time, right? And so I'm wondering, like, I hope that that's not happening with her book in real. I hope that's not happening with her book in real life, and I think that she wouldn't let it happen. But I also want to talk about the cover just for a minute, because the cover is like an actual photograph of two African-American people like intertwined, and it's in black and white. And it's not the typical like cutesy caricature cartoon, you know, the bearded guy with the axe and then the girls in the flouncy dress and, you know, the ones that I'm embarrassed to bring up to the register. It's not that at all. And so I think, and then the other book, A Love Song for Ricky Wilde, is similar. It's photographs again of real people. And like, I just think that is a really good testament to her probably being committed to doing these stories right, because she's like, yep, this is a book that's about these people and this is how I imagined it and this is how it's going out into the world. And you just don't really see a lot of that. The only other person I can think of in recent years that has had real people on her covers is Jenny Han. And when The Summer I Turned Pretty came out, the lead was a white girl.
Wasn't it like from the side, so you didn't really see her face?
She was blonde. She was a white girl.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of the other books.
Yeah. So, and then she changed it so that the lead character was half Korean. Yep. And the same thing with her other book series. And then all of a sudden, it was like, okay, she like made a decision and the covers were an Asian girl. And I was like, okay, so she's like, we're doing this. And I just think that that is really important for authors to do. And the fact that she mentioned it within her book makes me think that it's a thing that she has had to maybe battle a little bit.
And what's interesting is another book we chatted about on here a couple of weeks ago that I finished, Sex, Lies, and Sensibility. That's also a Black female romance author. And her cover is like cartoony illustrated. And I do wonder what conversations like happen behind closed doors about what the cover will look like and why the publisher wants it to be a certain way. But I agree, she probably, Tia Williams, had to really push for these books to look like this. And I'm so glad that they do. Should we talk about what we're reading now?
I read this week the second book to Stephanie Garber's Once Upon a Broken Heart. This one's called The Ballad of Never After. I read the first one a couple weeks ago. It's, I think it's considered like a YA fairy tale type book. It's exactly what I needed while tiling. It's quests and curses and magical spells and trying to figure out if this quote unquote fairy tale this character has been told her whole life is actually based on real people, how to unwind that. And it was lovely. It was just what I needed. Just, you know, completely opposite from reality. So I'm enjoying it. And now I have to order the third book. So yeah.
I was in Florida, so I had some time in airport. So I finished 7 days in July, in June. Oh my God, I've called it the wrong month every single time. 7 days in June, I finished it. And then a bunch of my students, I always try to do book talks, like book pitches before we go on a long break because they don't have homework assigned. And so I'm always like, this is your time to like pick something you want to read and read it. And so I usually just pluck like 10 books from my library and like do book talks on them and like try to get them interested in ordering them or going to the library, or we just had the book fair before break. And my students are like big time readers this year, like the entire crew of them. So they jump in and then they have me email all of the titles. It's the cutest. It's like, it feels like a hug. I'm just like, this is the most wonderful. Sometimes they hit reply all and say, I just finished this one and I think so-and-so would like it. And it's adorable. It's so cute. So I admitted that I had not read Good Girl's Guide to Murder. I told them that I had, and then the next day I was like, I totally lied. I have not read that. I mixed it up with One of Us is Lying. And I was like, I haven't read it. And I was like, but I think my friend Steph has it, so I'm going to read it over break. And they were like, oh my God, the girl from Wednesday, the best friend that's blonde, she's going to be the lead in it. And they've already started filming it. And there's more than one book and you have to read it. And it was like three different girls were like in my face being like, you have to read this. So I read it over vacation and it was delightful. And it's, you know, it's a murder mystery. It takes place in a small town in Connecticut. This girl decides to do her senior capstone project on this girl who has never been found. And her boyfriend commits suicide, and they basically think that that's his like admission of guilt. And this girl, this girl that's doing the capstone project knew the boy and was like, he was not like that. He was so kind to me when I was like a younger dweeby kid. I want to investigate this. And then she like launches into this investigation that puts her in danger and her family in danger. And there's like a lot of like twists and things that she unveils, and it's just really, it was really like a fast-paced good read. And because it's from the perspective of her capstone project, it's written like a teenage girl, which I really like because it made it go really fast. And I thought it was really great, and I bought the second book. I found it at Target, and so I did that. And then the other book I'm reading is Butcher and Blackbird, the first book of the Ruinous Love trilogy, which I found out that they're all standalone books that have some kind of connection. So it's not the same couple, all three books. But Butcher and Blackbird has 857 trigger warnings at the beginning of it. It's about two people who are infamous serial killers who have a chance meeting and fall for each other, and then also decide to make a game out of hunting people. And it's got kind of a Dexter vibe, like they only kill bad people. That's kind of how they like justify it. And so they make a game to like make the kill spicier and like more exciting for each of them, because this is how they like get off. they decide to hunt the same person, and whoever gets there to the person first gets to kill them, is basically. And that's not giving anything away because I'm 20 pages in and this is like already the setup. It's quirky. It's actually pretty funny. I haven't gotten it to any like super gruesome parts yet, but both of these people clearly have like traumatic pasts that I'm excited to learn about, because you don't just like end up being a serial killer, I don't think. It has unbelievable ratings. People on TikTok are raving about it. I think the second book comes out soon. The author, Bryn Weaver, is like very active on socials, and she like interacts with people, and she's like, follow me on TikTok, follow me on Instagram, here's my website, I have a newsletter. Like she's like doing it.
I'm interested to find out what the cookies and cream ice cream apology is in reference to.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be bad. Based on Steph, I don't know if you're going to, the first couple pages, they talk about maggots crawling out of a body and how it looks like little orzo pastas.
Doesn't bother
me. That doesn't bother you? Okay, no. Then you'll be fine probably. Molly wants to die.
Orzo isn't gluten-free, so it doesn't bother me.
Oh, is that how we're doing it? Okay.
That is a book I will not be reading, but I look forward to hearing how Stephanie likes it. This week, I went back to Lynn Painter land. We've talked about Lynn a lot. We have a dedicated episode about her. This book is called The Do-Over. Caitlin and Steph had already read it. This is a time loop story. I have to say, I think Lauren Oliver, Before I Fall, kind of wrecked me, because that was such a good time loop and it was so well done and kept me kind of guessing and into it. And
this is a totally different vibe time loop though.
For sure. Yes. Totally different genre too. But I don't know. I think it kind of set me up to be like, I don't know that this is holding my attention. I felt that the first half was kind of slow and I was surprised because I love her writing and I love her banter. And I was like, wow, I'm not like, I don't know, racing through this in the way I have the other ones. But the back half, I loved. The two main characters, Emily and Nick, wind up going on what she calls the day of no consequences, which I just love as like a concept. And it was just written so beautifully in the way that they're trying to like be very present with each other and realize that, you know, the clock's going to reset. And so say everything they want to say, be completely honest, get it all out there. And then by the end, I was like very into it. And I felt like everything we've read of hers, I thought, this could be a TV show. This could be a movie. This one especially, I felt like almost would be better as a movie. I feel like I would have gotten hooked earlier if it was in film form. And then at the end, and I think she's done this for other books, but maybe I just didn't notice it as much. Just a Spotify playlist inspired by the characters. And I saw that and I like went to my phone immediately to look it up because first of all, it's like 50% Taylor Swift. But there is one scene where Emily, the main character, knowing that like the clock's going to reset, just decides to do all this unhinged shit one day at her high school. And in that part of the book, she says, I walked down the hall with Beastie Boys Sabotage, like blaring in my head. And I was like, if that doesn't make it into like the adaptation version of this, I will die, because it was like the perfectly chosen song. So anyway, if you've liked the other Lynn Painters, you should definitely add this to your list. Like I said, a little bit of a slow start for me, but I was really happy that I read it. And then I just started this morning the book that I unwrapped on a previous episode, which was my blind date book, called Famous for a Living. I'm only like 30 pages in, so I'll let you guys know how it is. But it has this cool kind of like visual treatment every chapter where it starts with what looks like someone's Instagram account. It's obviously about an influencer. So I'm looking forward to digging in. She is going to get canceled somehow and go to Montana. So I think I'm going to like it. If you guys want to follow along with what we're reading and also see all of the great stuff that we talked about today, we'll share all of the Tia Williams covers and everything else we mentioned. Give us a follow over on Instagram. We're at plansarebooked. You can also email us, plansarebooked@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And until next time, our plans are booked.